Well, strokes are pretty scary, and they can change the quality of your life in an instant. And I think that's why it's so important to understand what strokes are, what can be done about them, how you identify if it's happening to you. And we've got a great guy to help us with that, Dr. Matthew Jensen, Madison Assistant Professor of Neurology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, part of the UW Health Comprehensive Stroke Program. He's been with us in the past. Great to have him back to talk about stroke. And maybe you've had a stroke, or maybe you know someone close to you who has suffered a stroke. I'm not a real big betting person, but I bet almost everybody listening today has known someone who has suffered a stroke. Maybe you have a question about it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Dr. Matt Jensen, welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
But let's start with the basics again and talk about what exactly is a stroke and how many people each year are affected by it in our country.
Yeah, there are two primary kinds of stroke. The most common is where a blood clot blocks an artery to part of the brain. And without blood flow, that part of the brain doesn't function. And if blood flow is not restored, there will be injury to that part of the brain. And then the less common kind of stroke is where there's bleeding into the brain or around the brain. And then some other structures can be involved. But primarily it's the brain.
And the bleeding, where does the bleeding come from?
The most common reason people have bleeding in the brain is from having high blood pressure for many years. There are some very small microscopic arteries to the brain that can wear down and deteriorate with high blood pressure.
Okay, that makes sense. Are there genetic conditions that make us more likely to have a stroke?
There are. So there certainly are families where people are having vascular events like strokes and heart attacks at a young age. And usually that's people that have the most common type of artery disease called atherosclerosis, where cholesterol builds up in the walls of the arteries.
You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question for our guest, Dr. Matthew Jensen, as we talk with him about stroke prevention and knowing the warning signs of strokes as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a Facebook question right there. Biggest factors for stroke, risk factors?
Well, unfortunately, there are a few factors that are important, but that you can't do much about. Yeah. So if you are from a family that has heart attacks and stroke at a young age, that's going to increase your risk, but there's not much you can do about changing your family.
Right.
Age, unfortunately, is a major risk factor. As time goes on, some of those arteries do see deterioration, even with the healthiest of lives. But there are a lot of things you can do to lower your risk of stroke. Quitting any habits that are particularly hard on arteries, like cigarette smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Eating a healthy diet, getting some regular aerobic exercise. And then if you do have some conditions that are hard on arteries, like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or diabetes, working with your doctor to get those under control.
Okay. Those are things we can do. Carl in Fountain City, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I suffered a devastating stroke 2 years ago while we were in Hawaii, and it totally paralyzed the right side of my body and garbled my speech, and I had to learn how to walk again, how to talk, and how to hold a toothbrush, a pen, and everything else. And I'm just wondering, it's been 2 years, March 14th, since this happened, and the only thing I find is I'm still terribly tired. Is that the aftermath of something like that or not?
Yes, that is unfortunately a very common effect a lot of people have after all kinds of strokes, where they're very fatigued.
Okay.
Now, usually that's a temporary phenomenon. Usually that lasts a few weeks or a few months. And unfortunately, there are a small number of people like yourself that continue to have fatigue after that.
Okay.
Now, there are some other things that can cause fatigue, and it's something you can talk about with your doctor. There are a number of other treatable conditions, sleep problems or other problems that could actually be contributing and might be amenable to treatment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're thanks welcome. A lot for calling. Gary in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi, guys. Thanks much for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I had kind of a rough one here. I just lost my wife of 50 years to a massive stroke about a month ago. My question is that, you know, she was so apparently healthy, and she was. I mean, very active. We walked every day. We cross-country ski 4, 5, 6 miles a day in the winter. We just were going and going and going. But she did have a little bit of a high blood pressure issue, but she was taking medications for it, so that was under control. And the only thing, what my question is that it was apparently diagnosed as a blood clot large enough to entirely close off the carotid artery on the one side.
Mm-hmm.
At the branching point, I guess they call it up above.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to figure out is, and the doctors here even I've talked to, says they were wondering how she ever could have formed a clot that mm-hmm. size or where it would have come from.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things I will back up on. When she was brought to the emergency room, she was still alive. Mm-hmm. She did have atrial fib, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It started with the heart. They did say she had what was consistent with what they call a broken heart syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
That's an Oriental name,
mm-hmm.
which could have dated way back in the past, but they said very mild and nothing really to shout about on that. And everybody's puzzled as to this. I know atrial fib can cause clots, but everybody mm-hmm. told me it was they're relatively minor. What's your opinion, just for the heck of it?
Yes. So, again, I'm terribly sorry that happened.
Yeah.
And
well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Lot of issues there, and that, you know, there's a lot we understand about what caused strokes and a lot we still have to learn, because we do have some people that are very healthy, don't have any of these family conditions, no bad
yeah.
habits, and unfortunately they'll still get a stroke. Now, I mentioned before this arterial disease that's our most common cause of stroke,
mm-hmm.
but after that, in a fairly close second after that, is the condition you mentioned of the heart called atrial fibrillation.
Yes.
And that's an irregular heart rhythm where the top part of the heart, the atria, are not pumping blood through well, and the
mm-hmm.
blood can pool and form blood clots that then can go to the brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They can be quite large. So the heart chambers are large. Large blood clots can form and travel up the arteries. So that would be the most likely scenario. And unfortunately, that happens to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only reason I was just even mildly questioning it is because the one cardiologist that I talked to at Marshfield when we brought her down there said that generally, he says, the clots formed with atrial fib are relatively small, and usually it's their survivable event. But he didn't say, he said the key word there, I guess, is usually.
Yeah, that is true. Generally, that's true.
Thank you. Again, I'm sorry for your loss, Gary.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that.
Appreciate your call. And good luck to you. And we'll take some more callers here. Bob and Ashlyn, thanks for calling. We'll turn to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, yes, hello.
Hi.
Yes, I've had a AAA aneurysm surgery about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, the problem was caught early because they were doing an MRI and they found it before there was a problem. But then I had the surgery mm-hmm. and a stent or whatever the reinforcing procedure they did. So I'm wondering if I'm at risk for a stroke.
Just to clarify, was that an aneurysm in your abdomen?
Yes, AAA, yes, the
yep.
abdomen.
Abdominal aortic aneurysm.
That's correct, yes.
Yes, it's, you know, that artery feeds basically the legs and the lower half of the body, so you're not at risk from that particular artery, although usually those types of aneurysms are caused by typical arterial disease. So if you do have some in your aorta, you know, it is possible you have some in the arteries going up to the brain as well.
Well, and then I want to go back about what is now 11 years ago. I had a thoracic aneurysm in my aorta,
mm-hmm.
and there was no surgery. I was just kept unconscious for, I think it was 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, thoracic aneurysms are more complicated. They're in the chest. They can involve the arteries to the head. For obvious reasons, you know, we don't rush to do surgery on the large arteries of the chest. Most people don't require surgery for that and can just be observed. But of course, you know, just following with your primary care doctor to make sure all your risk factors are under as good a control as they can be.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Delafield. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling and want to see if the doctor's aware of the work done at Cleveland Clinic by Dr. Esselstein and Cornell by Colin Campbell and another physician out of Harvard and Baylor, Dean Ornish, for preventing strokes and heart disease with a low-fat, plant-based diet. It's been proven to be pretty effective.
Yeah, there's what to eat to prevent heart attack and stroke is, and on the one hand, simple, and on the other hand, quite complicated. Pretty much everybody's in agreement that if you take in too many calories in any form, that's bad for your health. And it's associated with high blood pressure and high cholesterol and diabetes and all these things that we know are very hard on arteries. Now, what exactly, you know, if you're eating a reasonable amount of calories, what exactly those calories should be made up of? There's a lot more controversy about that. I think most people would agree that a diet primarily based on plants is healthier than one primarily based on meat. However, there certainly is a lot of debate, and the studies are very difficult to do because it's very hard to keep people on particular types of diet. So we haven't had as much luck with those kinds of studies as we have with studies of drugs, where we can be a little bit more confident in our results. So The debate rages on.
Thanks for calling. Stephanie in Minocqua, hello.
Hello. My mother has high blood pressure issues, and just recently her eye has been bothering her. And I'm wondering if that has anything to do with a possible sign of a stroke.
When you say her eye's been bothering her, is it pain or is she having changes to her vision?
Both. It's watering and it's been painful and blurry.
Yeah. That could be a number of things. Actually, it's too bad Dr. Knock is not here anymore. Yeah. So when the eye is watering, that often suggests something on the outside of the eye is not right, and which is not related to blood vessels or stroke. And so that's something her doc could look at the outside of her eye and see if there's any obvious reason for that.
Right. It went away and then it came back.
Okay. For instance, it's very common with allergies. People can get a watering of the eyes. If they get something in the eye irritating it, can certainly do it.
Mm-hmm.
If there were no other symptoms like the watering and she just developed sudden onset of blurry vision, that would be a very concerning symptom for stroke and certainly one that should be evaluated immediately. This sounds like it's come out a little more gradually, and then with the other symptoms, it sounds less concerning, but probably still a visit to her doctor to check it out. It's a good idea.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about stroke prevention and knowing the warning signs of stroke today with Dr. Matthew Jensen of the University of Wisconsin Health Comprehensive Stroke Program. You may have some questions for him, and I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We're going to take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Net, and then we'll be right back with Dr. Jensen. Stay with us. It's probably the rare person who has not... Oh, excuse me. I lost my voice there for a second. Let me get it back here. It's probably the rare person who has not seen someone they know who has suffered from a stroke. And once you've seen someone you care about go through that sometimes long and difficult process of trying to regain speech or range of motion or strength, you really want to avoid it yourself, of course. And we're lucky to have first-rate medical professionals working to help stroke survivors here in Wisconsin. One of them is Dr. Matt Jensen, and he is an assistant professor of neurology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, part of our UW Health Comprehensive Stroke Program. Matt, great to have you back. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
And certainly if you have questions or comments, I'll need your voices because apparently I'm losing mine for some reason. I don't know why. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We got an email from Sandra who wondered what our TAs...
TIAs,
I'm sorry. Are they mini strokes? Or?
Yeah, so we often call them mini strokes. The official term is transient ischemic attack, or TIA. They are an ischemic stroke where a blood clot has blocked an artery to part of the brain, but the body is able to break up the blood clot and get blood flow back before much or any damage is done. So people will have the symptoms of the stroke temporarily, and then they'll go away.
Okay, and usually the temporary symptoms under those circumstances would be the headache or the vision or...
They can be any of the same symptoms you can get with a stroke that lasts, where you're left with symptoms. The nervous system does a lot of different things, so it's a little hard to sum up the symptoms of stroke, a little harder than heart attack, where chest pain is pretty yeah. universal. But the nervous system is in charge of letting you see. And letting you feel touch on your skin and letting you move and talk and walk. So if all of a sudden you or somebody else complains that they're not seeing normally or talking normally, they're numb or they're weak or they're unable to walk normally, that's a concerning symptoms for a stroke. And there are the less common types of strokes with bleeding where you can get a sudden severe headache. That's the other symptom.
And you don't want to wait.
You do not want to wait. So with the type of strokes caused by blood clots blocking arteries, we do have a treatment. We have a medicine we can give to try to break up the blood clot, but we only have a short period of time to do so, really just a few hours. So if you or you see anybody having those sorts of symptoms, we really want you to call on 911, getting into the nearest emergency room.
And trying to do it within an hour or two.
Absolutely. Definitely within an hour. And the fastest you'll get in is really to just dial 911. It is an emergency, even though it might not hurt. There might not be any pain whatsoever. And if it's not a big deal, the doctors will check you out and send you home. But if it is a stroke, then we need you there quick if we're going to be able to treat you.
Let's turn to Jan in Lancaster. Jan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The doctor just mentioned the bleeding. About 6 years ago, I had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, and it came on very quickly with a severe headache. Mm-hmm. I was taken to Madison and was there for quite some time. Mm-hmm. My concern is what caused that. Mm-hmm. I'm in relatively good condition. I don't have high blood pressure, don't have high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering about I worry frequently about the reoccurrence of something like that.
That is a particular kind of stroke. I talked before about bleeding directly into the brain from people that have years of high blood pressure. Subarachnoid hemorrhage is bleeding mostly outside of the brain into the cerebrospinal fluid, and it's most often caused by an aneurysm, which is an outpouching of an artery to the brain. And there's a lot we don't understand about aneurysms. A lot of people are born with aneurysms, and they never grow, and they never rupture, and they never cause a problem. And then in a very small percentage of people, unfortunately yourself, they will rupture one day and cause bleeding around the brain.
Okay.
And so they usually, you know, when that happens, they do a lot of tests to find the aneurysm and fix the aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main thing to do after that type of bleeding.
So is there a chance that you have more than one?
There are some unfortunate people that have more than one. Okay. And then we have to make some tough decisions about whether to do procedures to intervene on the other aneurysms that haven't caused any problems.
But those would be noticed during the tests of
one? It's the same tests looking at those arteries.
Okay.
So talk it over with your doctor. They should have all the records from that time.
Sure.
You might not remember all the tests you had, of course. that's the main thing we do for that.
Yeah, because there was no medication or anything.
Yeah, it's not a medication thing. If a person needs a treatment, it's a surgery.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jan, for calling. Marty in Elmira, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And what a great show. I don't know that I could hear anything like this anywhere else. Periodically, a handful of times throughout the course of a year, if I bend over, let's say I'm in a grocery store or whatever, to get this or that, I stand up, and all of a sudden, in my right eye only, my vision slowly goes to like a black and white picture screen full of fuzz. My left eye is completely clear. I can see where I'm at. But I know now to, it's happened enough times, I know now to just stand still, and it seems to last about 30 seconds. And then my vision comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm a little worried about that.
And what is that? And have you closed one eye and the other eye when that's going on, so you're sure it's just the one eye?
Oh, I know it's my right eye.
Yep.
It's been going on for a few years. I've been to my family doctor, and he, you know, didn't offer much.
Yep. You know, if it was both eyes, that's actually, both eyes is actually not a terribly concerning symptom in that we all can get a drop in our blood pressure if we bend down and stand up. So, but if it is in the one eye, the concern would be that you have a narrowing in an artery to that eye, so that with a drop in blood pressure, the rest of your nervous system is getting blood flow just fine, but that eye is getting a little, not as much blood flow as it wants to get. And it's telling you by changing your vision.
I'm borderline high blood pressure, and yep. Within the last couple of years, I've started taking medication for that.
Yep.
And it seems to have waned.
Yep. I would go back and talk to your doctor over a little bit more. And usually what we'll do is a test to look at the arteries in the neck, the carotid arteries that give blood flow to the eye, and see if you've developed any narrowing in that artery.
So I should ask my physician specifically for a test in those particular areas?
Yep. That's what I would do.
Curious. Yeah. Thank you.
You bet.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Julie in Oshkosh. Hello.
Hey. Excuse me. I'm having the same voice issue. I was wondering, I have high blood pressure, and not blood pressure, high cholesterol.
Yep.
I don't have family history of it. I'm fairly slim. I weigh 120, and I'm 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
I am going to strenuously avoid going on to a statin if possible. So I'm going to ask to see a nutritionist, mm-hmm. and I understand that I may get some kind of confusing information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't eat meat, just mm-hmm. to make things even more confusing.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, once one does lower one's blood, one's cholesterol,
mm-hmm.
is there a reverse in the effects that the high cholesterol has had on the arteries before that? So if there's buildup, does it get rid of the buildup?
That is excellent question, and I'm so sorry to say that we haven't seen people have reverse of their artery disease. So I might be unaware of a case that's been written up somewhere, but to my knowledge, unfortunately, the artery disease, we can slow it down, and we can often stop it by eating a healthy diet, getting plenty of exercise, and doing all the right things for your health. But it looks like it's a really hard thing to reverse and actually clean out some artery disease once it's gotten started.
Well, that's annoying.
Yeah, it is annoying. I agree. And so there's lots of research going on trying to find, a medicine or something that would be able to reverse that process. Everybody wants that. And so far, unfortunately, we just don't have it.
Maybe if I stand on my head.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work, but okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Julie. Alan Waukesha. Hi.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
A comment and a question, I guess.
Okay.
Number one, I listened briefly last year when you had this subject on, and I wasn't able to get through. I wanted everybody to be aware that we have a very active Waukesha Stroke Support Group at Waukesha Memorial Hospital, and it's all free.
Oh,
very,
good. Excellent.
Very helpful, very interesting for people who are suffering with strokes and their partners. My wife has had 5 strokes over a period of about 6 years, and she has what they've always called low normal range blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
but every once in a while it spikes down.
Mm-hmm.
And the first ones were TIAs, and they never caught it. They didn't do anything because by the time we get to the hospital, everything seemed to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one was the worst one. And the night before, I heard on BBC about a report that they had in The Lancet about studying people with low blood pressure, that they're at high possibility for strokes. So when we got to the hospital, the doctors checked her all over and everything seemed normal. So they took everything off and said, well, we'll just keep her overnight. And I argued with them and that they had to put the machines back on. And finally, they noticed that once in a while, her blood pressure would spike way down.
Mm-hmm.
So then they got busy with the medicines and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I never hear anybody, never read anything about people with low blood pressure.
So right.
I just wanted to make people aware that that's also a possibility for strokes.
Yeah, low blood pressure, it is a less common problem. The problem we see most often is high blood pressure. And we know high blood pressure is hard on arteries and can lead to blood clots and strokes. Low blood pressure is complicated. If a person's blood pressure gets low enough, the nervous system does not function normally. So kind of everybody's had the experience of standing up too quick and getting a little lightheaded and woozy. And when that gets bad, people can lose vision, and they actually can black out and lose consciousness. So there's all sorts of symptoms that can happen, that some of which are somewhat similar to a stroke caused by a blood clot. So often we're having a little difficulty deciding when somebody's having multiple events where the nervous system isn't functioning, if the blood pressure is dropping or if a blood clot is forming. And, you know, the low blood pressure can be caused by a number of different things. That's not caused by blood clots, but that certainly is something to, you know, work with your primary care doctor on. It sounds like you guys have been working on this for a while, so you've probably had some evaluation already.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling and pointing that out. I appreciate it. Bruce and Holman, thanks for calling. Hello to you.
Hello. I have a cautionary anecdote about getting emergency care for somebody who's evidencing stroke symptoms. A while back, I took my father into the emergency room after he fell, and on the way, he was evidencing classic stroke symptoms. His speech was slurred, his face had sagged, corner of his mouth went down, he had trouble walking on the right side. Got him into the emergency room, and the only thing that they cared about was, did you hurt your hip? Did you land on your hip? They x-rayed his hip. They were only interested in looking for a broken hip. I told the emergency room doctor, look, I said, he can hardly talk. I said, this isn't normal for him. His right side of his face was sagged. And they basically looked at me and said, we're the doctors here. We'll be the judge of that. And he wasn't admitted, and he wasn't treated for stroke. Turns out later on he had an MRI for symptoms of dementia, and he had had two strokes. His memory centers and his cognitive centers and his brain were damaged. I wish now I would have gotten in that doctor's face and insisted that they investigated the stroke symptoms.
Yep, that's a tough one. So it's stroke. Again, the nervous system does so many things that strokes can look like a lot of different things. And the diagnosis is definitely not always straightforward. You know, as doctors, we try to do the best we can, but sometimes things are confusing and complicated, and we try to do all the proper tests. But, you know, it's also an issue that not all strokes can be treated. So we talked before about some of the symptoms that are warning symptoms, and we do want to check you out. But even when some people are having strokes, we don't always give that medicine to try to break up blood clots, because it does have some risk of causing bleeding. And if a person's symptoms aren't too bad, or they have a particular risk of bleeding, we won't always necessarily use that treatment, because sometimes the risks outweigh the benefits. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what went on that night, but all I can say is sometimes the stuff's complicated.
And Bruce brings up the symptoms again, and I think it's worth repeating here before we get to the end. Somebody else was asking about that, if you could repeat the symptoms of a stroke.
So if somebody, you know, I like to think, does somebody have trouble talking or walking? I just remember those easy because they rhyme. Is somebody having trouble seeing? Is somebody having trouble moving? Or is somebody having trouble feeling? They're numb. So those are, and then that last one is a sudden severe headache. So all the symptoms of stroke tend to come on all of a sudden. They're not gradual. They're not coming on over hours or days or weeks. They're all of a sudden over seconds. So if all of a sudden the nervous system doesn't seem to be working properly, or you have a sudden severe headache, that's what we want to see in the emergency room for.
And someone was telling me about a headache they had, and it's happened more than once, a few times where you're going along just fine, and then suddenly you've got a kind of a bad headache, and it lasts for, but it only lasts for like a minute or 2 minutes or something.
Unfortunately, how long it lasts doesn't necessarily tell you whether it's a dangerous kind of headache or not, but that speed it comes on is really helpful. So, you know, typical headaches like migraine headaches or tension type headaches, they can be severe, and they can be long or short. But they build over some period of time, you know, a half an hour or an hour, several hours. People that have these types of headaches kind of know what I'm talking about. But the headache where you have bleeding in the brain is really different. And people tell you, this is different than my normal headaches. It's like somebody just hit me in the head with a hammer. It just happened all of a sudden.
So that's worth getting into seeing, even if it's over with in 30 seconds or a minute or
even if it's over quick. If you had a sudden onset headache, particularly if it's sudden onset and severe, we really want to check you out.
And let's turn to Carolyn in Wautoma next. Hi, Carolyn.
Oh, good afternoon. See, I have a question about vertigo. If there's any issues with possible down the road strokes or something. Mm-hmm. If I suffer from vertigo, mm-hmm. I would say on, I probably get symptoms at least once a month, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they can be severe where I can close my eyes and it still feels like the room is spinning. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it just is, you know, not very bad, but I get nauseous and mm-hmm. And such. Is there any correlation between the two?
The short answer is almost never.
Okay.
The long answer is a little more complicated. So vertigo, unfortunately, is a common problem like you're describing, and usually it's from a problem in the inner ear. There are these structures in the inner ear that kind of help us with our balance and sensing when we're moving or rotating. When they're dysfunctional, they're telling the brain we're rotating or moving when we're actually not.
The little balls let loose?
Exactly, exactly. Now, fairly rarely, somebody will have a stroke to an area of the brain that's actually part of that pathway of that information coming back from the inner ear,
mm-hmm.
and they'll get some of those symptoms, but they're actually from a stroke. Now, usually there are a number of other symptoms because the nervous system does so many things. Usually they have some of these other more typical symptoms like weakness or numbness or trouble speaking. Particularly with what you're describing where you have a history of this. This has been coming on and you have a regular pattern of this where it's not all of a sudden one day this is a whole different thing and a new thing. That's a very non-concerning story for stroke. That stroke doesn't do that sort of thing.
Okay, it's usually when I first get up in the morning or it happens in the middle of the night.
Yep, that's real common, okay. And usually from a problem with the inner ear.
Okay.
So you can talk that over, I'm sure you have, but talk that over with your primary care doc.
Wonderful, thank you so much.
Welcome. Yep, thanks, Carolyn. And Julia in Mondovi, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. There's always independent companies that, you know, for a low, very low cost, you can have some screening done, ultrasonic screening and EKG, you know, like for the stroke and carotid artery screening and heart rhythm screening,
mm-hmm.
you know, that type, and aneurysm screening. For somebody that, you know, maybe has a family history of that, that'd be helpful to do. I mean, when I say low cost, you know, it's usually under $200
mm-hmm.
and have,
mm-hmm.
you know, five tests that can give you, they give you a printout, a couple, you know, after the radiologist and everything that's been, you know, documented, then you can take that to your doctor and,
mm-hmm.
you know, if there is some recommendations for further testing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to have your family doctor look at that.
Yeah, it's a really good question and turns out to be a really complicated issue. So you would think the more information, the better, you know, that if all tests were free and safe, we should just scan every single part of us and see if we see anything abnormal. Where things get complicated is we always find things that are not causing problems. And then we have these really tough decisions to make about whether you should do things like procedures. So for instance, if you do get ultrasound screening of the carotid arteries in the neck and you find narrowing, then the main decision to be made is whether to have a surgery to clean out some of that artery disease. And there, it turns out that's a complicated issue because it's a little different for everybody whether it would be in their best interest or whether the risks would actually outweigh the benefits. So what we usually recommend and what a lot of kind of professional societies have recommended is going to your primary care doctor instead, since they know your medical history and your background and your family history, and ask them, you know, do what tests make sense for me? What should we go looking for? And when is it not a good idea to go looking for trouble?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Bob in Ashland, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I used to work in Marshfield, and I worked in an IR department, mm-hmm. and we had a couple great neurosurgeons, and I just want to mention mm-hmm. that. If you have a family history of strokes, grandfather, father, uncles, aunts, whatever, that the kids could be studied, and we ended up studying a family where we saved two of the three boys, had aneurysms, and we coiled them,
mm-hmm.
so they didn't necessarily have to be clipped as a general surgical thing, but we coiled them
mm-hmm.
in the IR suite, so I just thought I'd mention that as a possibility for people who have family histories and were questioning what they could do about them.
Yeah. Yeah, with these aneurysms, with these outpouching of arteries, like you said, you can either do an open surgery where you put a clip across it, or you can put a tube up the artery, a catheter, and put these coils inside it. And both are effective, and they're kind of different people. One would be better than the other. and both are an option.
Yep, yep.
All right.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. In our last 30, 40 seconds here, any final comments for our listeners on stroke?
No, yeah, just don't smoke, eat a healthy diet, get plenty of exercise. And if you have any stroke-like symptoms, just come into the nearest emergency room. Let us check in.
Get in there within an hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always a pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I look forward to another visit from you.
Thank you.
Dr. Matthew Jensen is an assistant professor of neurology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also part of the UW Health Comprehensive Stroke Program. So always great to have him along and appreciate it. And he'll be back and we'll have him on again. Just to look ahead to what's coming up tomorrow, we'll find out about some recent archaeological finds in the La Crosse area with some archaeology specialists. And then at 11:45, we'll talk with one of the authors of Code Talker, the first and only memoir by one of the original Navajo Code Talkers of World War II. I'm telling you, it's a fascinating book. I'm really enjoying reading it. Probably finish it tonight, and you'll hear about it tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us.